Thanks for listening to The Drive with Big Al and D-Mac, on demand, brought to you by SEL Mortgage, the leaders in Colorado of special circumstance lending, helping everyone, including people with unusual financing needs. Locally owned and operated. Visit MySpecialMortgage.com. That's MySpecialMortgage.com.
No sleep till!
Live from Sports Column in Lodo, presented by Coors Light, it's the Fan Football Pregame. Here's Mike Evans and D-Mac.
On a chilly December morning here in Denver, although sunny, the Broncos are on the road today, so that means we're at Sports Column, and today they will face a team that is terrible. Now, what they do with that, I suppose, will dictate future conversations, but I'm joined by Mike Evans. The one thing that I know about the Bengals is they're a train wreck, and it's so interesting how you can get to 5-6 where the Broncos and the Bengals are. The Bengals got there by starting 4-1, and then they have fallen apart. I mean, I am talking like the way the Broncos were losing last year, that's what has been happening to the Bengals. Their quarterback now is on IR. That brings in Jeff Driscoll, who is, you know, he'll probably be in the NFL for 10 years because he's 6'4 and 225 pounds and, you know, works out nice, and I'm sure he's got a nice mom and all that. But he's one of those guys. My favorite guy like that, Mike, was our Syracuse guy, Todd Philcox. Remember Todd Philcox?
That's right.
Yep. Todd Philcox was a guy at Syracuse. Now, you got to understand our history with quarterbacks when Mike and I were younger at Syracuse. I mean, we're talking about Don McPherson. We're talking about Marvin Graves. We're talking about Donovan McNabb. And sandwiched in there and during that era for 1 year was this big, tall kid who had a big arm and had all those NFL measurables named Todd Philcox. He played 1 year at Syracuse, and it was okay. Yep. You know, it wasn't incredible. But I believe he played for like a decade in the NFL. And then I was in Buffalo, another Todd. Todd Collins came along and was drafted out of Michigan, big school, just like Jeff Driscoll was out of Florida before Louisiana Tech. And he just looked like the guy. Well, he's as dumb as a box of rocks, but he played in the NFL for 15 years. In fact, I've challenged people, I think in 13, 15 years, a long time, several teams. I've challenged people throughout the years to look at any quarterback in the NFL who's played as many years and has played in as few games as Todd Collins. And to me, and I understand he's a young guy, but to me, Mike, this is just who we're dealing with right now.
Yeah,
a guy like that.
The only thing about him that represents a wild card that makes me a tad bit nervous is that Cincinnati can use him up. They don't care. He's disposable. He's sacrificial. And for Driscoll, he's looking at this as an opportunity. So he's going to throw all caution to the wind. He doesn't care if he gets hurt. He's going to run at the first hint of it. And he won't slide. He'll, you know, and that represents a bit of a wild card. Heck, Cincinnati saw it firsthand just a couple of weeks ago when they lost to Baltimore and Lamar Jackson running the ball 27 times. A game that probably they had no business losing, but they lost because Lamar Jackson ran the ball 27 times. So that's the only thing about this game that gives me some pause, because I agree with you. Cincinnati is such a train wreck that Marvin Lewis, the man who might have the strongest job security in the entire NFL, it seems, he continues to just survive. Now we're waking up this morning to rumblings that his job is on the line.
Of course it is. He's terrible.
He's been terrible for a long time.
Average
for a long time.
This guy's judgment was, hey, Hugh Jackson would be good for us. I mean, there are just some guys who just can't get it done. Like, on the surface, and we've met him a couple times, Jeff Fisher just was a coach who couldn't get it done. Marvin Lewis is another one of them. And it's just too, I mean, I don't know how he's kept the job as long as he has in Cincinnati. They don't play well, they're not coached well, and it's Cincinnati. So that's the base storyline of what's going on here. Listening to Cecil talk about Andre Smith, here's a guy who may start who was cut by the Cardinals. You're not good enough to be on the Cardinals, and all of a sudden you're back and you're playing for the Bengals? I mean, Mike, this should be a field day. If you want to get your khaki pants Chubbaholic-ness on, I mean, we could see the game of a lifetime from Bradley Chubb eclipsing double figures and facts and becoming a rookie of the week and month and all that sort of stuff. I mean, it is on the plate today.
They should win the game. They should win this game. And you're right. There's two teams that are 5-6 and trending exactly the opposite way. And so go out, say, back up everything that you made a point to say this week, that you learned your lesson from the Jets game, that you understand that, you know, you can't get caught looking ahead. You can't have, I mean, we even had the Giants game from last year invoked for how this team needed to learn their lesson.
And by the way, we were right about the Jets game this year. They're not a good team. They should have won. We were right about the Giants game last year. They were a bad team. They shouldn't have won. What we missed on was how terrible the Broncos were. We gave the Broncos too much credit. So if we're guilty, fellas, of giving you too much credit this week, well, it's not on us.
No.
Okay? You understand that? This is who you are playing. If you want to play down to the level of your competition and throw out a Jets game or throw out a Giants game, that is on you. All it would show me is that you're pretenders, the game against San Diego and Pittsburgh being virtually nothing. And, I think they will win by a large margin, but they certainly don't have to. Like, I wouldn't come on the air on Monday tomorrow and be like, oh, I'm so disappointed they won by 3. I was disappointed when the Broncos won by 3 in the Peyton Manning era.
Right.
I mean, I think there were, like, some ugly, kind of bad, mediocre wins.
Style points mattered then.
It did matter then, yeah. Because they were just such a talented team. So I was like, whoa, what's going on here, guys? Because we had higher expectations. We don't have that for this team. You win by 1, 2, 3, I don't care. I don't think that'll happen. I think they're going to win by more. But you can't lose, never mind get blown out. The Cleveland Browns destroyed the Bengals at home in the first half, Mike. The game was over at halftime.
That was a game that we were watching it, keeping an eye on that game as we were getting ready for the Broncos game last week. And you could just, you know, sometimes you could just see a team that is laying down. You could just see it. I mean, you could see a team that is out and out quitting. And that was the case with the Bengals last week. At home against Cleveland, a rivalry game, a regional rivalry game, and they laid down. So if they laid down in that game, don't you think that with the Broncos coming to town that they are equally likely to lay down?
No doubt about it. There's no sense of inspiration out there for the Bengals. It's not like they're dying to play for Jeff Driscoll. In fact, just the opposite. I would guess most of the vets are kind of like, oh, boy, you know, it's come to this. And A.J. Green is back. But players coming back off injury, Mike, they need time to – they don't go from being injured and missing games to being the most dynamic guy in the world. They need some time to build back. It would surprise me if he even plays half the plays he normally would
play. But here's the big thing. You're very confident about them. You're probably more confident about them than I am. I'm still confident that they'll win. But you seem to believe that they should win by a lot. Do you believe – that this team is capable in this situation of being a front runner? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
they're on the road. They're a 5-point favorite. They're expected to win. They're entering a part of their schedule where a lot of people think they can rip off.
Will they
be able to handle their newfound prosperity?
We'll dig into it. Are they really a team that just beat 2 playoff teams, or are they the team that gave up 1,000 yards and they got lucky? We can dig into that. First, let's find out from Mark Schlereth what it's like to have a voice that's not injured and scratchy. Mark!
Here's Mark Schlereth with his biggest observation for today's game. It's Exclamation Mark. Powered by Piper Electric, your hometown electrician.
All right, guys, there's a couple things that I think are important, imperative, if you will, to going to Cincinnati and continuing the streak, right? You just beat the Steelers. Before that, you beat the Chargers. Got to keep the streak alive. And there's a couple of different things. One, got a new quarterback, Jeff Driscoll. Now, Jeff Driscoll is a guy that is going to run a lot of the read option stuff, a lot of the read zone stuff, and the play action off of that. So you're going to have to be incredibly disciplined on the edge. And I'm telling you what, when you play a quarterback like this, understand this, guys, and I'm not one of those guys that's talking about trying to go out and injure people or trying to go do whatever. When you play a quarterback that's a threat, every time he shows that read zone and he's a backup, somebody hit him in the jaw. Somebody get after him on every single play. Even after the ball's handed off, if he's faking it, He's live game. So make sure you take as many shots at Jeff Driscoll as you possibly can. And the backside of those running lanes, those are the things that get restricted. They get open because you're so worried about that quarterback taking off and running. You have got to be so disciplined on the edge, constricting the edge, keeping your shoulders square, making sure there's no cutback lanes. You can do that. You can have success against this offense of the Cincinnati Bengals. Looks like A.J. Green's going to be back. He is a threat. There's no question. But I think the biggest thing is stopping them from a running standpoint, especially with a new quarterback that's going to run that zone read kind of game. And Driscoll is pretty damn good about it, and he's done it well in the past when he's gotten opportunities. On the flip side of the ball, you got to find a way to block Geno Atkins and Dunlap. They are outstanding. So still, take your shots. Hey, Case Keenum, take your shots. 1 to 2 shots per quarter down the football field. Keep that side of the field open. Continue to run the ball with your guy, Phillip Lindsay. Those are the things that are going to be imperative. And make sure that you figure out who that tight end is. Make sure that you continue to feed that tight end in the middle of the football field as often as possible. You do those things, I'm telling you what, I promise you, you're going to come away with a victory in Cincinnati. When you go to the Queen City, get your cleats on the grass!
Exclamation mark is powered by Piper Electric, your hometown electrician.
Everybody thinks the Broncos are going to win, but who is this Broncos team? Meanwhile, the week that it was, relatively quiet for the Broncos, they picked up a new tight end. The old man in the tight ends, as Hemingway is now on the active roster. but
I got that.
Yeah, thank you. Syracuse guy.
That's right.
Smart guy.
Literature.
By the way, Jim Boeheim, if a reporter asks you what it's like to coach a game where both of your sons are playing, just be a human for a moment.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, give me a break. God, that guy drives me freaking nuts. I was just like, yeah, it was really awesome. I wasn't happy with the way my team was playing, but it was really cool. His response was, I'm sure that was a big moment for their mother. Great guy. All right, when we come back, Cecil and Pritchard, what to watch for, and the Kareem Hunt situation. Fascinating story, that old Kareem Hunt situation. Details next.
Live from Sports Column in Lodo, presented by Coors Light. It's the Fan Football Pregame. Here's Mike Evans and D-Mac.
Welcome to the Fan Football Pregame Show. We're at Sports Column, where you can register to win $200 to Uber. That's cool. A free shuttle to Broncos Stadium at Mile High 2 hours prior to every home game. And Sports Column is a great spot for the Broncos and the Iowa Hawkeyes, specifically. This place packs it up for college football. All right, let's get to the news of the day outside of the Broncos a little bit, Mike, and Kareem Hunt. What did you make of the entirety of the Kareem Hunt story?
Well, I think the shocking thing was that why is it that TMZ can continually get these videos, but the NFL with their million dollar security operation with many guys on their payroll who used to be, you know, in FBI and, you know, CIA. I mean, they got guys that have deep backgrounds, investigative backgrounds, making up their staff there.
Well, they have an answer for you.
And they can't get the video, but TMZ can?
Now, this depends on what you believe and what you don't believe. So the story I read is that the NFL, through legal channels, tried to get the video multiple times. But the police are not required to release it to private organizations. And you ask, how could they do it? How could TMZ get it and the NFL couldn't? Well, the NFL has to go through legal means. You know, they have to go by the rules. Whereas TMZ can just take a security guard who whips out his iPhone, who doesn't care about working at that hotel anymore, and just records the whole thing on his iPhone. He has access to it, and he sells it to TMZ. And TMZ will pay him for that. So I know what you're saying, but just to answer that question.
But did the NFL suspect that there was video?
Yes.
And okay.
The story I read said yes.
Okay.
Then, and they requested it multiple times, and they didn't get it.
But then if you know that there is video that is so damaging, that's going to be so embarrassing to you.
Second part of the story.
Which this is now embarrassing to the NFL, then you take the authorities to court. You sue them. You do whatever it takes.
Be more aggressive. I agree with
you. To get it released.
Like, don't just take no for an answer. exhaust all possibilities and make it clear.
I mean, to just sit back when this is all said and done, go, well, we tried through legal channels and TMZ waived some cash and that's how they got it. Oh, well, that's not good enough.
Yeah, it gives the impression that really, did you really do everything you could have done? Now, the Chiefs say Kareem Hunt lied to them. Now, that's interesting because the Chiefs could request the video. They could get shot down. How much should the Chiefs actually try to get the video compared to the NFL? You would think that the NFL is going to press harder. Plus, how much of the truth did the Chiefs really want to know?
Well, there you go. And I think in that situation, teams, they want the NFL to be the heavy. They want the NFL to be mean guy so that they can sit back and go, look, hey, man, you know, hands tied. NFL came in and, you know, took charge of all this and suspended our guy. What are we to do?
Then you sit the guy down, you say, what happened? And he tells you a thing of lies. He's making it up. And then it's he said, she said. Now, what do you do in that story if you're the Chiefs? Do you take the word of a guy like Kareem Hunt? Or do you take the word of a woman who's 19 years old who shouldn't have been out drinking in the first place? And the stories are different, right? The stories are, first of all, Kareem Hunt and his buddies decide to have a fun night and get a party bus and go out drinking. That happens every single weekend here in Lower Downtown. So there's nothing wrong or unusual about it. It happens all the time. She lied about her age to get into bars. How many times does that happen in America with the 20-somethings, 19-year-olds, college? Mike, it happens all the time. So I'm a little hesitant to pass judgment on it. She's the same age as any college kid. My kid's in college. I have no idea what he's doing. I'm sure they're having fun and doing things that we all did in college. So I'm not about to cast aspersions based on that. They get to his apartment. Now, this is where he lived. You know, this isn't just, he wasn't in Vegas. He wasn't out on the town. No, he lives in this place. He's from Ohio, and he's bringing his buddies over. He's the big shot NFL guy hanging out with his pals. And then the story differs. The story from her version, they wanted one of his buddies to be with her. She said no, they kicked her out. They say that they found out how old she was, and they kicked her out. Either way, they kicked her out. And you can see in the video, Kareem Hunt is like, the first visual clues are, shut up and what are you doing here? That sort of thing. And then she comes at him. But that's where he lost it. And he pushed her, separated by a friend. She came at him again. She kind of swiped at his face. The buddy's in the way. He pushed again, not really that hard, didn't knock her down or anything. Then she comes again. And a buddy's in the hallway, and then Kareem Hunt goes nuts, hits his buddy, who runs into her. Neither one of them hit their face on the wall. That's important because some of the stories said they hit their face on the wall. Didn't happen. But then he kicks her. And I just don't think you can come back from that. But to me, the NFL has this. They've got the 6-game suspension. And to me, this is a no-brainer for the 6-game suspension. I do think it's a different case than Ray Rice, and I do think we have to look at things case by case. But then the Chiefs just cut him. But I think, Mike, the Chiefs cut him because he lied to them, and now they're embarrassed by this entire situation.
That, and they also already have Tyreek Hill. And you want to be the organization that has both Tyreek Hill and Kareem Hunt on your roster. I think they looked at it, and they also looked at it and said, it's a 6-game suspension. We're not going to have him. We're not going to have him for the rest of this season anyway. So this way, we go out, we make a statement. It shows that we take these things seriously. We don't want players lie to him. I mean, the guy. Now, do they do the same thing? Do they release him if he's not going to be suspended? Do they release him if the word they're getting is that this is an ongoing investigation, and until due process is all done,
that he can continue
to play?
If it depends on the degree of the lie, you know, because if he said something and then the video comes out and it's totally contrary to what he actually told them, then it's just a guy you can't trust. He's had other violent episodes, too. He got in a fight with a dude and punched a guy in the face, apparently, not so long ago as well. His reaction to her was another thing that you just got to say, wow, is this really the type of guy that we want around here?
Yeah, I get it, but I think if Like, I'm real cynical when it comes to big-time pro sports and exactly how much these teams really care about doing the right thing. I think it was because they had both Tyreek Hill and Kareem Hunt, and because they already knew a suspension was coming down, that gave them the ammo to go out and suspend him and use the idea that, well, he lied to us, and we don't tolerate that kind of stuff.
But
I think that's like third on the totem pole of the reason why they got rid of him.
Okay, fine. I'm not disagreeing with you. It brings up another sticky wicket for the Chiefs. So that's not okay, but it's okay what Tyreek Hill did to his pregnant girlfriend in college.
Right.
How do you justify that, Kansas City Chiefs? I would look at this and take this as a moment, a great moment, where the Broncos got rid of A.J. Johnson, and I hope to God they don't bring him back on the practice squad, where they got rid of Pac-Man Jones. Why they brought these guys on the team in the first place is beyond me. You want to see something repulsive? Watch Pac-Man Jones, fully restrained at a police station, spit on a female nurse who's just trying to do some sort of, I don't know what she had to do to him then, but he spit on a woman the third time, like he spit on a woman. Bizarre behavior. Locked up like Hannibal Lecter. There's video of that too, by the way. But for whatever whacked out reason, the Broncos thought this was a guy that we needed, and everybody was defending him. It was repulsive. It is time to time. I'll agree with you on the time's up thing, and I'm done with it. If you've got some sort of violent action towards a woman, why would you ever draft that guy, pick that guy up in free agency? The fact that the Redskins picked up
Reuben Foster
so quickly.
And we're the only team out there, by the way.
Of course they were the only team out there. Nobody's got.
And all it takes is one.
It's ridiculous. And they're being. And Doug Williams, for his ridiculous comments, should be apologizing. And I don't know if he deserves that job that he has. So I think all these things should be a way to treat women better,
but everything
and
you
not
said,
have acceptance for this type of behavior.
Everything you said about Tyreek Hill, but Tyreek Hill, that had died down. You know, because the Chiefs have been playing.
He actually pled guilty to it.
I know, but doesn't matter because he was playing so well and the Chiefs have been playing so well. The Chiefs fans certainly moved on, and most of the NFL had already moved on. It's not like whenever Tyreek Hill goes out and has a big game for the Chiefs, everyone's sitting back going, yeah, well, you know, big game by Tyreek Hill. But you remember what he did to his pregnant girlfriend? It had faded into the background.
And I think that's sad. And by the way, we'll see Joe Mixon today. And Joe Mixon, in a bar fight, slugged a woman that he outweighed by like 100 pounds in the face. And I wouldn't touch Joe Mixon with a 10-foot pole, but it's okay for the Cincinnati Bengals to have him on the team. And by the way, it was okay for the Bengals to have Pac-Man Jones on their team for a long time. They're not a good organization. They're not coached well. Their owners are a little bit repulsive and disgusting. And everybody's like, oh, D-Mac, don't you believe in second chances? Sure. Yeah, but you don't have an inherent right to play in the National Football League. And I'll be more proud of my team, the Denver Broncos, if time goes on and they take more of those things into consideration. And by the way, when you look at guys like Bradley Chubb and Cortland Sutton and Royce Freeman and Phillip Lindsay, do not go there with me that we can't win with guys that don't have, you know, great sparkling red. You can. You can find those guys, Mike. And you can develop a culture where you keep guys like
that. Well, yeah, you have to have, you're talking about a 53-man roster. Of course you have to have most of your guys, the overwhelming majority of those guys have to be like that. But you can have a few turds. You can have
that are violent to women.
Well, I'm not saying.
Not that are violent to women in any form or fashion.
I'm saying just bad guys. You can have.
What degree of bad guy are you okay
with? Well, that's what I'm talking about. Somebody like that, you're going to have guys who get into trouble, who do things, but if the NFL allows them to play, then you have to be open to the idea of having them on your team because
the NFL will allow it. It's a good point, and that's where it comes back on Roger Goodell.
I mean,
NFL.
It's like the Aqib Talib thing. Look, Aqib Talib has done a number of things we're all aware of in society that get you in trouble and certainly get society to look down upon your actions. But yet in the NFL locker room, he's a revered, idolized character.
But that's because the players don't have the proper perspective on what impacts their game. They don't. They're too into it. And they've had too many issues. And then you go with the nature of the game itself. Said, well, if you smash people in the head enough, they're going to make some bad decisions. And perhaps they've got to police that better. But at the end of the day, Mike, it was a bad situation by Kareem Hunt. But maybe even in light of everything, even worse by the NFL for not acting on it quickly and really getting to the bottom of it.
Does he play again in the NFL? He will, and here's the big difference.
I think he will. And now, listen, I'm just telling you, it wasn't good. He deserves a consequence. He deserves punishment. But his actions, in my opinion, were not the same as Ray Rice. Were not the same as Joe Mixon.
But here's the big difference. Ray Rice,
Joe Mixon's playing.
Ray Rice didn't get back into the league because of what happened.
He wasn't good enough in football.
He wasn't good enough in football.
Right.
His yards per carry had dropped
down. Kareem Hunt's really good.
All right, so that's why.
Oh, yeah.
You know, if Ray Rice was still running the ball like Kareem Hunt's running the ball, yeah. Ray Rice would have come back and played. Okay?
Yeah.
Kareem Hunt will get to play again.
Yeah, and I'm okay with that. Just that he would never be on my team. I mean, I would never want him on the Broncos. Would you? Oh, my God.
I'd have to think about that.
Let's find out what Cecil and Pritchard thinking about what to watch for.
It's Pritchard and Cecil's What to Watch For, presented by Golden Oak Lending.
Pritch, I know everyone's going to say, Jeff Driscoll, watch out for this. But to me, it's handling the power of Joe Mixon. That is a significant runner, a guy that brings power and speed to the table. And I think they're going to run more because of that inexperienced quarterback. Is Joe Mixon, and should he be, the primary focus for this Broncos defense?
Not primary focus, but one of the focus. I mean, I think the Denver Broncos defense still has to cover the field. I mean, you got read option, you got Driscoll, the threat, you got A.J. Green back out on the field. I mean, if you're not conscious of that guy, then there's something wrong with you. But Mixon does bring the combination of speed and power. That's what makes backs effective in the National Football League. But I want to go back to the offense. I think the onus is on the offense for the Broncos this week. They have to put up points on the scoreboard and not allow Driscoll to feel comfortable in this game. They got to make him one-dimensional by the offense for the Broncos scoring a lot of points.
Pritchard and Cecil's What to Watch For is presented by Golden Oak Lending. Whether you're buying or refinancing, Golden Oak Lending can help. Call today, 720-500-GOLD.
Well, as the hysterical Von Miller said, we're on to Cincinnati. And we'll do that with Troy Rank coming up next.
Live from Sports Column in Lodo, presented by Coors Light. It's the Fan Football Pregame. Now let's get the scoop from Denver 7 Broncos insider Troy Rank.
Troy, out in Cincinnati, presented by Tranny Law. Troy, first let's start with the weather. What is going on there?
Yeah, it's windy. I was down on the field level earlier. It's a beautiful day. D-Mac should be in the 60s, low 60s, sunny, but they're talking about possibilities of 30-mile-per-hour winds. I'm watching the flag wave now above the stadium, and it's howling a little bit, so it could mean this is a game for heavy doses of Philip Lindsay. Should be anyway, but I'm thinking they're going to be a lot of incentive to give him the ball today if the wind's blowing.
Well, hold on. We found out what happens when it's windy. You just move inside. That's what the Broncos did recently. It was sunny but windy, and they just went inside. So why don't they just play the game inside?
Yeah, I don't think they have an arena here for that. They have a baseball field next door. But
were you okay with that move that day that they started outside, it got too windy, and they moved inside? Were you all right with that, or did you think that was kind of, aren't we missing a little opportunity here?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, if they don't play well in the wind today, you could say that. I like when they move inside because they get more work done. When I talk to the players about it, D-Mac, it's an easier environment to get work done, get it done more efficiently. So, but clearly, if the wind somehow affects the performance today, you're going to be like, why didn't you stay outside?
Do you feel confident that the Broncos have gone about their business this week in a way in which they'll play well today? We won't have any repeats of the Jets or even going back to the Giants last year?
Yeah, I can only say that sound like they've learned their lesson. Talking to guys both publicly and privately, Mike, that, hey, the Jets game was a joke. We can't not show up like that. And a lot of them even harken back to the Giants game last year, where you just show up and think you're going to win. This team knows they're not good enough to do that. And if there's any reminder, you just think back to the Jets game. So I do think they've learned their lesson, and they will compete. Whether they can win, I mean, that's different. I mean, I expect this to be a close game. But I do believe their mentality and their mindset is certainly right. This underdog idea really kind of captured them in terms of we got to prove people wrong. I think I know they bought into that. But does that translate to wins? We'll see.
All right, here are the inactives for today. Shaquille Barrett, Tremaine Brock, Nico Fala, Jeff Holland. He got added to the team as they let go of A.J. Johnson, but he's not active today. Sam Jones, Brandon Marshall, and DeMarcus Walker, who clearly just, I mean, just move on from him, that guy. I mean, what's the point of him on the team? So that means the tight end also rises. Hemingway is playing today.
Yeah, they needed an extra tight end, and I thought Holland might have a chance to be active to help with the pass rush, but he's not playing because they need Shamarco Thomas on special teams. So, in other words, if Holland were going to play, he was going to have to play teams. And this is basically a kind of a game that could decide whether they're in the playoff hunt, and they just weren't comfortable with him being on special teams, it appears, at least not today. But, yeah, I mean, Hemingway gives them depth, but they need Lacoste to play well. And he's given an opportunity with Heuermann down, and I like him as a receiver. And Case Keenum's at his best when the tight end's available in the passing game. So, but, yeah, Hemingway, keep an eye. He's an impressive figure, D-Mac. I mean, when you're just talking about athletes, he jumps off the screen, but I can't sit here and tell you he's going to make an impact. I do know that Lacoste can and should make an impact.
You know, all week we brought up the wild card that was Jeff Driskel, you know, and what he could bring, especially running the football because he has nothing to lose. Now that we've arrived here on game day, was a lot of that talk over-exaggerated in your mind? Now that we're here, do you feel like, you know, this is a guy who should go out and play like the, you know, not even journeyman quarterback that he is?
Yeah, I'm with you, Mike. Like, this idea, oh, he runs fast. You know, like, listen, I don't care if he's running with cheetahs on the National Geographic Channel. If you're a good team, you find a way to beat a team that's quarterbacked by Jeff Driskel. I mean, my bottom line, I don't care if it's on the road. I don't care if he runs well. You have to find a way to win this game if you think you're a good team. So I thought it was a little bit overdone, this idea. Like, so let me just get this straight. The Bengals, who are a hot mess, just store guys that don't play that are like the best player in the league. Like, I just felt like it was a little much. You know, saying that, he presents problems because the unpredictability part. You don't have a lot of film on him. All that is true, but the reality is, if you're going to be a playoff team, you have to win a game like this.
All right, Troy, what's your pick?
I have him winning, mainly because of the way I've seen them play. And go back even that Chargers game, the confidence they're playing, they're learning to take the ball away, and they're protecting the ball. So I have them winning 29-22 and playing well. But, again, this is like all NFL games outside of a couple each week. I imagine it's going to be a one-score game going into the fourth quarter.
Hey, real quick, you've been on top of this CU story from the start. What's your reaction to them going with Mel Tucker, the defensive coordinator from Georgia?
Yeah, they were going to make, you know, based on everyone I was talking to, Ryan Day was on the radar, but, I mean, he has a lot of reason to stay at Ohio State, the gravitational pull, and whether they make him coach in waiting or however they end up terming that. But Mel Tucker is a guy like Jimmy Lake from Washington that's a great recruiter, ready for the next step. His defenses, you know, the second half of against Bama last night notwithstanding, he checks all the boxes. I don't know enough about him, Mike, to say that that's a home run hire. I thought Day would have been. But in terms of Tucker, if you look at his resume, he's ready for this step. And they're going to keep, if and when he becomes the guy, they'll keep two or three coaches, if not more, on staff to recruit California and Texas. And that's the key. And then have him grab a few guys from the South or Midwest. But I don't dislike the hire. I just need to learn more about Tucker. But I'll say this. He checks all the boxes after working for Saban and then working for Kirby Smart at Georgia.
Okay, great stuff. Thank you, Troy. We'll look for you on Denver 7, our Denver 7 Broncos insider. When we come back, Sandy breaks it down by the numbers, and the numbers are ugly for the Bengals, as you'll hear next.
Live from Sports Column in Lodo, presented by Coors Light, it's the Fan Football Pregame. Here's Mike Evans and D-Mac.
All right, welcome to it. We're off to a rollicking start here at Sports Column, where we're signing people up to win $200 to go to Uber, to use for Uber. So I'm like my dad. A free shuttle to Broncos Stadium.
I'm going to go to Uber.
I'm going to take the Uber. Got to get on the Uber.
Get off my lawn.
Yeah, that's right. Well, as long as we're in this mode, let's hear from Sandy Clough. Go, Sandy.
Now let's hear from the great Sandy Clough with Sandy's stats of the game.
Fellas, on the surface, this would seem to be a what-me-worry game. After all, the Broncos are 7-3 through the years against Marvin Lewis's Cincinnati Bengals. But the Bengals have won two of the last four, and strange things tend to happen in Paul Brown Stadium. Sometimes good for the Broncos, sometimes not so good. Good, Brandon Stokely's miracle catch, giving the Broncos a 12-7 win in 2009 in Josh McDaniels' head coaching debut. Bad, well, in 2014, the Broncos are sailing along, going into Cincinnati for a Monday night game, and they end up getting pounded by the Bengals 37-28. The game I remember at Paul Brown Stadium was the Corey Dillon game. I know it was 18 years ago, but every time the Broncos go in to Paul Brown Stadium, I remember that game from that year. The Broncos were going along pretty well, having won 4 of 7 games, and the Bengals were 0-6. Dick LeBeau was their head coach at the time. The Broncos had 32 first downs that day in Cincinnati. The Bengals had 15. Brian Greasy threw for 365 yards. The combination of Akili Smith and Scott Mitchell threw for 34 yards for the Bengals. The difference was Corey Dillon ran for 278 yards on 22 carries, scored 2 touchdowns. Peter Warwick gained 90 yards on 3 carries, scored a touchdown, and the Bengals finished the day with 407 yards rushing. Is Joe Mixon Corey Dillon? Of course not. And I'm sure today will be a different sort of game. But could this be a trap game for the Broncos? They played 4 playoff teams in the AFC over the last month. Now they look ahead to teams that over the next month have a combined record of 13-30-1. This game today features the two most battle-tested teams in the NFL. Both are 5-6. The Broncos, the number one strength of schedule team in the NFL, 69-50-1, the record of their opponents to date. The Bengals, number two in strength of schedule, 67-52-2. Looks like a game where Case Keenum could break out, much as Trevor Siemian did back in 2016 when the former Bronco quarterback threw for 312 yards, 4 touchdowns, and a 132.1 passer rating for the day. Keenum has really come on. Pro Football Focus has rated him over the last 6 weeks as one of the 10 best quarterbacks in the NFL. If he is that today, the Broncos will win. But I think it'll be tight. 19-16 Denver.
All right. See, not as optimistic as I am, but as you guys are pointing out in the promo that I had nothing to do with putting together, but you roasted me mercilessly as if I produced the promo.
Hey, man.
You guys are a
trip.
You
know, it's like Peyton says, you know, when he throws an interception, you write the check on everything you say.
You guys are a trip. And I did sleep very well, by the way. And you guys, nothing wrong with Emmanuel Sanders, huh? No beefs with him whatsoever,
nope.
Huh?
Just keep on.
Nothing.
Just
nothing.
Keep on never, balling like he does.
Never did anything wrong in the past. Skipping practice to party.
I'm just saying. That
grand jury investigation.
He falls under the category of the NFL. It's
banning,
pro football.
Banning local reporters.
If you're
from
going out,
them,
if you're going out and balling, that's all that really matters.
Gotcha. I'm just glad.
You got to admit he's having a really good year.
Of course.
On the field.
Michael, of course.
Okay.
Nobody's ever denied the talent of Emmanuel Sanders. Nobody's ever denied that. I've never denied that. Never said he was a bad player, just the opposite. Instead of, I will say this. They had to get rid of a Sanders or DT. It wasn't working. And it wasn't a good situation for these younger guys to be in. And it probably did force Case Keenum to just be making these ridiculous choices because there's this pressure on Case Keenum to get it to both of
exactly,
these guys.
Exactly.
Right? Like, you just had to make a choice. Now, I would have dealt Emmanuel Sanders because I didn't see the Broncos as a playoff contender during the trade deadline, and I thought you should get more value. Michael, did they get lucky, or did they deserve the wins against the Chargers and the Steelers?
Oh, boy. Well, they did give up, like you said, 1,000 yards of offense, but this is a league where, come on, the good offenses are going to move the ball. They are going to move the ball. There's really nothing you can do about it. The question is, can you force turnovers? Can you force field goals instead of touchdowns in the red zone? And what they were able to do these last 2 weeks is just that. They forced some turnovers. They stiffened in the red zone. So, you know, when it comes to playing the best offenses in the league, that's not just a Bronco formula. I think that's everybody's formula. So they did it well. I think they earned it.
Okay. I think it's a nice little combination. You have to have a significant amount of heart if you're Will Parks to take on a guy much bigger than you at the goal line. And then you get lucky. Like, that ball could have easily got – first of all, he didn't have to fumble it at all. He could have fallen into the end zone. If he did fumble it, it could have gone out of bounds. You got kind of like the ultimate. You know, you forced the fumble at the one-inch line, and the ball trickled out of bounds for a touchback.
Yeah, but, you know, the Bears force a ton of turnovers. I don't hear anybody talking about them being lucky. I hear them talking about how good their defense is and how good they are at forcing turnovers.
You like Ben throwing everybody under the bus after the game?
Oh, that's Ben.
He is something
that
else.
That is so Ben.
He is a trip, man.
That is Roethlisberger.
He is a riot.
Great player. I never really liked him, though.
I got it. By the way, the Steelers could win the Super Bowl this year. They're that good.
They'll find a way to self-combust.
They gave up 527 total yards. I mean, it was stunning. The Pittsburgh Steelers showed no respect whatsoever to the Broncos secondary. They didn't care. We're going to throw. They threw it 56 times. Stunning. The Bengals, though. What are the Bengals? The Bengals are a mess. And we'll go out to Cincinnati. Jeremy Rauch, who works for Fox 19. I mean, this guy has chosen to live in Cincinnati. Oof. We'll go out and talk to this dude next.